Welcome to the Odds Breakers, number one place for shared, sharp betting information.
Welcome back to podcast 26 of 2020. I'm your host, Kiev O'Neill. You can follow us on Twitter at The Odds Breakers or follow us on social media / The Odds Breakers. This episode is being brought to you by MyBookie.ag for a 50% sign-up bonus. Please visit MyBookie and use the promo code The Odds Breakers. Terms and conditions apply. If you'd like to help us out with our costs, sponsor the podcast. We would love to help you out. Please visit theoddsbreakers.com, click shop, and become a premium member for $17.99 a month. You can get my plays and premium plays before the line moves. If you'd like to make any donations, you can do it through Patreon. And if nothing else, please visit theoddsbreakers.com and become a free picks newsletter subscriber. Had a pretty good horse racing weekend. Our premium play hit. We gave out a race 12 to our clients, and it was kind of like a combination of Marco's, mine, and Chris's insights here, and it happened to hit an exacta box and a trifecta box. Was a $74 investment that turned into $300, so happy about that for premium members that were able to make that play. The rest of the day was okay. Bet on a lot of races. Some started pretty weak, kind of started catching my groove. Would have been real nice to hit that pick four at the very end, but was able to hit the pick three with race 10, 11, and 12. The race 14 was too much of a toss-up, so unfortunately wasn't able to hit that pick four. But overall, was a great day. My friends, we have a great show for you today. Cub fan Danny is back because the UFC is back. UFC 249 this weekend. There's going to be some plays from Danny, and I might even have some premium plays for some clients as well, being that my UFC has been doing pretty good over the past, I would say over the past year. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about football and the NFL. Can't get away from it. I mean, it's kind of the sport that people count on the most to have a full season. We hope it does. But I personally think that a few things need to change to protect the integrity of the sport. So I'm thinking back to this article that I read, and it was back in November from Kevin Seifert from ESPN at Seifert ESPN. It was a great article because it was calling out the NFL for the issues it has with the officiating of the game, right? It was targeted the NFL and trying to get them to fix it, you know? I mean, it's getting pretty obvious. I mean, this is after the whole Saints thing happened where the wrong team was in the Super Bowl, you know? He thought, just like I thought and many other people, that putting replay in and things like that would fix some of the problems in the NFL, but I'm just going to read his first paragraph, and this kind of tells you everything you need to know about when you sports bet or when you place bets in the NFL. He stated, "The 2019 NFL's officiating fiasco has snaked far beyond the calls we see on Sunday afternoons or in prime time. It has invaded offensive huddles, perverted the league's carefully cultivated replay system, and dented the NFL's integrity. Worse, the debacle has exposed systematic issues that can't be fixed during the season without unprecedented intervention." Basically, he was talking mostly about the fact that the officials would make a terrible pass interference call, go to their own replay, and uphold it so they don't look like idiots. Instead, they look like corrupt assholes. You know, they're afraid to change their own judgment call, even though it was blatantly obvious. This is what we're betting on. We're betting on officials impacting the game more than the players. I mean, do you think that people actually want to bet on this shit?
Hell no, to the no.
Now, we see some of that in basketball, obviously. When two big teams are playing, the officials, whether they know it or subconscious or not, they keep the game kind of close and let the players decide at the end. Well, if that's the case, why don't we just have three-minute games is what I always used to say. But I think the NCAA has actually done some things to hold them a little bit more accountable. But these NFL officials really think that they're above the game themselves. They think they're kind of like dictators out there. They think their decision is more important than what's really true. That's what Kevin Seifert writes about here. In my opinion, I think that the NFL should seriously take a look at what they're doing, especially when there is legalization of sports betting coming through the United States of America. You know, in corporations, when they screw things up and leak things about their stock, they can be held accountable for lack of institutional control.
Unreal.
Well, does the NFL lack institutional control because the outcomes of the games are not what the players decide? That is something that I believe should be really looked at this offseason. In my opinion, you need to wipe it clear, start paying officials for performance, or bring in a whole new crew that can bring integrity back to this game. All right, well, the next segment I want to talk about with the NFL here is I already have calculated the Pythagorean win totals from 2019, and I wanted to cover that a little bit with you here. Just so you can kind of have an idea of where the season win totals could go. Now, unfortunately, we don't have the schedule just yet. It's supposed to come out, I believe, on Thursday. And after that happens, we can kind of look at some spots, try to calculate a little bit more on season wins. When you look at all the people that teams lost through free agency, the people they gained back, you look at their schedule from last year, if it was tough, if you look at it from this coming year, if it's going to be easy or tough, and do your appropriate calculations. And I'll be covering every conference, well, actually every division in each conference under a microscope throughout the summer, and give out some season win totals like usual. So I'm excited for that. But just kind of pre-season win total, want to talk a little bit more about the NFL here. We'll start with the NFC North. Green Bay had 13 wins, but their Pythagorean win percentage, well, not percentage, total, because you multiply the percent times 16 games, was 9.8. So basically, with the total points the Packers scored, you take that to the 2.4 power, and then you take that over their total points scored to the 2.4 power plus the opponent's points to the 2.4 power, and then you multiply that fraction by 16. What that tells you is maybe these teams have had some bad luck. Maybe they had eight losses, but they were by like two or three points. The way the ball bounced at the end, but they beat a lot of teams, their eight wins, by a lot of points, meaning they should have won more games. Technically, it's just the luck of the draw that they didn't. And the same thing happens on the other side. Maybe they won a bunch of close games, but they got their butts kicked a lot, and they should not have won eight games. You know, it kind of gives you that little bit of a perspective on that. You know, by using the Pythagorean win total, you can kind of see maybe where a team should have been by the amount of points they scored. You can actually do it for yards as well, but at least for points, you can, it kind of factors in if they're somewhat clutch or not within the 20s. Like, some teams can get a lot of yards but just can't put the ball in. You don't want to give them too much credit for that. Pick your poison here, but at least you can kind of look at their Pythagorean win total with their actual wins and see if they're really scoring a lot of points for the amount of points that they give up. What I like to do when coming up with next year's season win totals is kind of averaging it, because, you know, if they're, and a lot of times they'll be close. Maybe a team's blowing out bad teams and getting blown out by good teams. That means their Pythagorean win should be matching their actual record, right? So I like to kind of get a little bit of an average between what they actually did and their Pythagorean. I'm going to go way more into that when we talk about season win totals, but that's the whole gist of it. So what the Packers are showing is that they won 13 games, but they should have won 9.8. What this tells me is that they're not scoring as much of a points on average to win those 13 games. You know, if you remember with the Packers, they were blowing out teams at home. Their home field advantage was actually way higher than other teams last year. And whenever they went on the road, you know, they would lose somewhat of a close game, and they win a couple of them too. Their schedule wasn't too bad, but you know, it tells you the Packers should have been a little bit more down to earth than 13. The Minnesota Vikings actually had a higher Pythag. They are 10.8, and their actual wins were 10. So maybe the Vikings were just slightly better than what their actual win total was. So really no adjustment from there. The Bears, 8 wins. Their Pythag was 7.4. Now, with the Bears, that last win was false. I mean, the Vikings benched all of their players, and I'm going to factor that in and probably take a half game off them when I start to do season win totals. But you got to look at those outliers and what situations these teams were. The Minnesota could not improve their playoff status, so they played all their third stringers, second and third, and the Bears barely won that game by 2 points. So, in my opinion, the Bears' win total should be about exactly where their Pythag was. And the Detroit Lions had 3 total wins, but their Pythagorean was 5.9. So they're scoring more points. They just couldn't put teams away. So, you know, for next year, when you're looking at it, are you going to look at the Lions as a 3-win team, or are you going to look at them as possibly closer to a 6-win team? Well, I'm going to look at it more closer to 4.5 in the middle when I make my decisions. The next one is the Saints. They won 13 games, but their Pythag was 10.9. A little bit of a difference there by about 1.1 games. Tampa Bay, 7, but their Pythag was 8.2. As you remember, Winston put up a lot of yards. They put up a lot of points, but they also screwed up by a ton of interceptions. So I could have predicted that Tampa Bay's Pythagorean win total was actually higher than what it was, right? Than what their actual wins were. So the Falcons were 7, and their Pythag was 7.5. They kind of did well at the end there. The Panthers was at 5, and their Pythag was at 4.9. Next division, San Francisco, NFC West, 13 wins, but they should have had 12, according to their Pythag. Pretty close there, only a game off. Seattle, 11 wins, but their Pythag was only 8.2. So it looks like the ball bounced their way a little bit with the amount of points that they put up. So won a lot of close games there. Los Angeles Rams, 9, Pythag 8.8. Arizona Cardinals, 5, but their Pythag was 6. The Cardinals did improve last year as the season went on. Philadelphia Eagles, 9 wins, 8.8 Pythag. Cowboys 8, but Pythag was 10.9. Okay, so it tells you that the Cowboys put up a lot of points. This is like almost a 3-game difference there, 2.9 than their actual wins. So if you remember the Cowboys, they would always blow the first couple quarters and then come back at the end to either win or get close to winning. So it tells you that they had the skill, but they just couldn't get started last year. Giants, 4 wins, but their Pythag was 5.3. Should have did a little better. And Washington, 3 wins, but their Pythag was 3.7. New England Patriots, 12 wins, but their Pythag was 13.1. If you remember, this team got worse as the season went on. Injuries happened. Players got tired, and they hit a lot harder part of their schedule. So they're blowing out some teams in the beginning and then kind of faded out at the end there. Buffalo 10 and Pythag 9.8, nothing there. New York Jets 7 and Pythag only 5.6, so they exceeded expectations. Miami Dolphins 5 wins, but their Pythag was only 3.6. Still can't believe what happened when they beat the Patriots that final game, tying the season win total there. So one thing I do want to say about the Patriots, we're going to find out if Belichick, and I think he is the greatest of all time, but I mean, if he happens to have a bad year, right, people are going to be like, well, maybe he was more Brady. I mean, he did well with Matt Castle. He did well with Jimmy Garoppolo, but you know, he didn't win any Super Bowls or I don't think any playoff games with those guys. I mean, it was always Brady when he was winning. So it's a legit question. I think they're really challenged this year. So if they even get 8 wins, I will give Belichick credit personally. But you're going to find out a lot about that. And you also have to wonder if Matt Patricia might be a little bit under fire if Belichick has such a bad year. His assistants have always been bad coaches in general. So you can look at Bill O'Brien. I mean, Vrabel's the only one doing well. All the ones in the past have not panned out. So you have to wonder if Matt Patricia, with only 3-1 wins last year, will be on the hot seat. Kansas City, 12 and 11.6, about right there. Denver, 7 and at 6.9. Oakland, 7 and at 5.2. So Oakland did exceed expectations there, won some close games. LA Chargers 5, but 7.8 was their Pythag. Wow, did the ball not go their way last year? And they blew a ton of games. Next division, AFC North, Baltimore 14, Pythag 13.4, so that's about correct. Pittsburgh's 8 and 7.6, Cleveland 6 and 6.4, Cincinnati 2, and Pythag 4.3. Wow, the Bengals, that first game they had with Seattle when they almost went to Seattle and won, the season just went spiraling down. But they put up some yards and a few points, but it's not like 4.3 is going to get you excited, but it was off. They should have had 3 or 4 wins, in my opinion. Houston Texans, 10 and 7.8. They got lucky last year. Tennessee, 9, but 9.9. They could have done better. The Colts, 7 and 7.7. And the Jacksonville Jaguars, 6 and 5.3. So, I mean, that's just kind of the extent of what you can do right now besides compilations of teams of what they added and what they've lost in free agency in the draft. As soon as I get that schedule and I can calculate how hard that schedule, not based upon their schedule last year, but based upon the Vegas win totals for next year, is when I can make a good prediction on what they're going to do for their total wins. All right, well, if you have any questions about this type of analysis, I would love to help you out there. Please tweet us at The Odds Breakers, and I will do the best I can to answer your question on the way that I like to calculate next year's wins. Without further ado, let's bring on our guy for UFC 249, Cub Fan Danny. All right, now I am very happy to welcome back a big contributor to the Odds Breakers. You know him as Cub Fan Danny. He is our UFC specialist. A huge event coming up this weekend with UFC 249. You can follow Danny on Twitter at Cub Fan Danny. My man, it's finally back. Huge weekend.
Is your head going to explode?
It might explode because this card is looking huge.
And I've been betting on snails going across the street with my neighbors, and they don't gamble at all. So we're all excited about getting something going. Thank you, Dana White. Thank you, UFC. I am so excited.
I know it's going to kind of make you feel a little bit more normal again as well. And, you know, we've always covered as much UFC as we could, as long as there's not too much going on. And you've done a fantastic job. I've been hitting my stride a little bit, just following some of your advice on these fights as well, my man. Obviously, going into doing a little extra research, it's fun. And I had a good time checking these fighters out today. And I'm really excited to hear what you got to say, man. But what a huge card, huh?
Listen, let me tell you about this 249 card, right? The main event is definitely a main event. The co-main event could be a main event. The third fight in the main event card can be a main event. The main event in the preliminary card can be a main event in the ESPN card. So they're all over the place. I mean, Dana White and UFC really stacked this this card to put fans out there. Listen, Kiev, Smiling Sam Alvey is the first fight of the night. Who doesn't love Smiling Sam Alvey? He's so much fun to watch. Listen, when you never know the first guy of the fight, of the card, and the early prelims. Nobody knows who it is, but everybody knows Smiling Sam Alvey. That's what kind of card this is, right? Yeah. Vicente Luque and Nico Price in the early preliminaries. If you guys aren't going to buy the card, which I think you're crazy if you don't, but you can still get it on ESPN+. It's going to be so much fun.
Absolutely. And that's only a couple bucks a month, and you're going to get all these ESPN events here. Ryan Spahn, I remember seeing him a few times. Alvey's competition right there. You got Sousa there. I mean, huge undercard. Alexi Olenek, his old ass is fighting. Holy cow.
Sousa just fought for a title a little while ago. The guy's fantastic. Fabricio Verdum was a champion. Okay? And he's fighting in the second fight. The co-main event of the prelim. I mean, it's so much fun. I can't even think straight because I'm so excited.
Well, my man, I am too. Why don't you tell us a little bit about UFC 249? Where is this fight going to take place?
Well, this is going to be in Florida, right? So I think the biggest thing here, we have Corona going on and everybody's panicking about that. States aren't opening up. And Florida's never been a destination for UFC. It hasn't. But what did Florida do? Hey, listen, come on in. We're opening up the state. Come on in. Come fight here. You know, Dana White wanted to fight on a private island. Bring some guys out to a private island last month. And ESPN, ABC, the head of ABC goes, you want to know what? We're not going to do it. It's too dangerous. We're not going to bring anybody out there. We're going to just cancel everything. Dana White had the whole thing set up for everybody to come out there. So he's been setting up this card for quite a while here, wanting to get people in and get excited. So Florida's the first place that opened up. So you want to know, hey, Florida, it's on you. You're going to get this fight. Unfortunately, Kiev, there's not going to be anybody in the crowd.
Oh, I didn't think so. Not this time. Not yet, anyway. You know, what's the limit here? I mean, there's going to be people on the sides, on the rings, right?
50, yeah, about 150 people inside the entire stadium with crew coming in, with fighters and their fighters' corners coming in there. So when this corona hit, they did a fight in Brazil, and I hopefully people remember this, but you know, it wasn't that bad. I was really expecting to watch something that was like in a little small arena that you could hear everything. They did it inside a giant empty arena where Brazilians are typically going crazy in the last fight, and you want to know what? It wasn't that bad. It was fun. The only thing that I think of, right, is this is tough because when I look at this fight, I go, okay, guys haven't fought in a while, which is understandable. It happens. But how they've been training?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knows?
They shut down all the gyms, right? You can't go near anybody, right? Besides your family, you can't go near anybody because they scared everybody to death, right? So who's training? How are they training, right? Are these guys going to be good enough to go out and train on their own, right? How much experience being in the ring is it going to be for them to pull out a victory, right? So when I look at this fight, I go, my gosh, there's a lot of money to be made, right? And I go to myself, who do I pick? Who do I go? There's so many massive underdogs, and it makes me think double, triple. And I always think every fight, every card, there's going to be an underdog. I think this one's going to have a lot of underdogs that you can make some good money on.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Yeah.
Because I don't know the training. I don't know what these guys are doing. I don't know anything.
Right? Well, and the crowd noise. I mean, some people feed off of it, right?
They do, right? And there's sometimes there's heels, right? And the heels, well, you know, we're talking about wrestling here, but some of these guys really feed off of, you want to know what these guys hate me? I want to go out there and do it, right? So who knows? Who knows how it's going to be? It's our first fight back, but the card is stacked, right? And when they're stacking the card, I think they're feeling like I'm thinking the same way is who knows how these guys are going to be coming back, okay? I know there's going to be some great fights. I know for 100% there's going to be great fights. I just don't know how great these guys can train for doing it because, you know, you're going to bring in Pettis versus Cerrone, right? And one of the fights I'll talk about. But is Pettis going to bring somebody in to go fight with him that's like Cerrone or vice versa? But when they're telling everybody, hey, you might die if somebody comes near you?
Yeah, so, who knows?
Who knows, right? Who knows? But listen, I think all these fighters are absolutely crazy, right? I think you have to be a maniac to go inside the ring and want to fight somebody and go to the death. Essentially, what they're doing is going to the death, right? Because it could happen. But I think they're all crazy, and they go, you want to know? We don't care. We'll fight. No big deal. I'm healthy. You know, if I get corona, I get corona, but I'm going to beat that just like I'm going to beat this guy in the fight.
Well, maybe it won't be too much on their minds. Maybe as soon as this thing happens, it's just going to be me against you, no crowd. Let's see what's going on. You still got your guys by your ring, you know, and everything. So I think that's going to, you know, probably turn into another great event, just like that Brazil event was, Danny. So real excited to see it. Well, let's.
And I'm happy for Jacksonville because you want to know what they need a fight like this, and I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there that are going to root for the UFC, and they probably wish they can get into the event. So good for Florida, good for Jacksonville. They're getting a great card. They can't get in, but you want to know what? They're getting a great card, and I think we're going to get a great card because I think we all like to see guys that want to fight, and we got a card that guys want to fight, Kiev.
All right, man. Let's get right into it then, my man. Let's go with the undercard here. What's the first fight that kind of tickles your fancy?
Listen, if anybody looks at the card and they're going to say, okay, who am I going to bet on, right? And you're going to say, okay, I like to get some odds that are good in my favor. Boy, this is a really, really tough card because the odds are all over the place. But, man, is it a fun card to watch. So the first thing that I'm looking at right now is Donald Cerrone. It's going to be the main event of the preliminary cards, which is going to be on ESPN. It's Pettis versus Cerrone. These two guys are warriors, okay? They've been around for a while. I think Cerrone's 37, Pettis is 33. But, boy, they seem like they're 47 and 57, right? That's how long they've been around. They've been around forever, and they're so much fun to watch. When Pettis was younger, he did one of the greatest knockouts I've ever seen where he actually did, like, a ninja move off the side of, on the fence and then kicked missing my name right now, but kicked the guy in the face and Benson Henderson took him down. It blew my mind, but that was a long time ago, right? And Donald Cerrone, he fought in December, right? A couple years ago. And then 2 weeks later, somebody dropped out of a fight. He fought again. Who does this? It's an absolute maniac. Mm-hmm. Right? So listen, even though Pettis is only 33 years old, I said that already. Like I think he's 47 years old. He's 33 years old. He's taken way too many beatings, okay? And since 2015, Kiev, 2015, he's 4-8 in that time period, right? The last fight he won, he knocked out Wonderboy Thompson with one punch. But listen, he was getting his teeth kicked in. I don't have a lot of confidence with Pettis right now. But then you say, hey, Danny, stupid, listen, Cowboy has lost 3 in a row. But he lost his last 3 in a row against a massive competition. Conor McGregor, do you know who that is? Okay. Justin Gaethje, do you know who that is?
Yep.
Yeah. Fighting for the title. Okay. How about Tony Ferguson? Do you know who that is?
The other title fight.
Oh, there you go, right? So he's lost 3 in a row. So listen, so what do you do? What do you do here? I don't know, right? But here's what I would do. Here's what I would do. I'm taking in on the dog in this fight, right? And who's the dog in this fight? It's Donald Cerrone. Cerrone is a dog in his fight. Why? I don't know.
It's a slight dog. He's a slight dog. I think it's like plus 120, plus 110, depending upon where you're looking. I think the best ones you're going to find, plus 128. I'm seeing one on Sportbet. He is an underdog here. And I wonder, you have some great points there. I mean, this competition was huge. I wonder if that's going to change and maybe it moves more towards the minus 110 here. If you look at Anthony Pettis, you know, he lost 3 of his last 4 himself, you know?
They're both not the same fighters. They're not, right? And when I look at Donald Cerrone, he at this point in his career at 37 years old, He's a gatekeeper. He's a guy that needs to fight. He wants to fight because he needs the money. The way his life is going and the way how he spends money, he goes, I need to fight. I want to fight like crazy. That's all I want to do. So listen, for me, his back is against the wall, okay? Another loss, will they keep him in the UFC? I don't know. Maybe Dana White says, listen, Donald, I can't see you get beat up anymore, okay? Anthony Pettis, he's going up in weight, down in weight. He's only 33 years old. He's taken some beatings, but he's given some. I think Donald Cerrone's got his back against the wall. Hey, kid, if you took a dog and threw him in the corner and you put it back against the wall, right, and he's got to fight out, what's going to happen? The dog's going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at Donald Cerrone right now.
All right, my man. I'm loving it. That sounds good. He's got a big size advantage over Pettis as well. So
he's a big boy. He's a big boy at plus 125. Listen, how about this? How about I think this fight goes at least into the third round? Okay? You can still get minus 110. You pay a little bit of juice, but it's not that much. If it goes into the third round, you're making a little bit of money.
Oh, there so you go.
I'm looking at Cerrone at plus 125, at round three at minus 110. I'm going to put them both down. More on Cerrone than round three. But you want to know what? Listen, it's a double win for me. I know it's going to happen because I have zero faith in Pettis. And I think Cerrone's got his back against the wall. And I think he's ready to go do this and stay in the UFC.
So it gets to round three minus 110 and Cerrone. So loving the plays, my man. That makes total sense. That's great. Now, what's the next one we have on the docket today?
So listen, before I even brought anything up to you and say, hey, what are we going to talk about? I says, hey, let me think about this. Let me see what we got going on. There's so many good fights in here. But Stevens and Cater, they look at this fight and I go, you know what? That's interesting, right? Calvin Cater at minus 240 and Stevens at plus 220. Stevens is lost. At this point in his career, Stevens, he's a warrior. But he's a gatekeeper, right? He's not a guy that can get over the hump. He's not that guy. He's proved it over and over again. He's not going to get over that hump. So I can't see him winning the fight, which is why I see it at minus 240 for Calvin Cater. But I want to ask your opinion on this, Kiev, okay? And you tell me as the guy that knows what he is doing in terms of his numbers, right? I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, I think Calvin's going to win this fight. Right, if he wins inside the distance, he's a plus 230 in some books. If he wins a decision, he's a plus 140. So I'm looking at this and saying, okay, he's going to win the fight. Will he knock him out? Good chance. Anything could happen. Is there a chance that he just dominates the fight and take the thing to the end? 100%. So I'm looking at two plus monies here instead of dropping a minus 240. What would you do in this situation when I'm looking at Calvin Cater and saying, I can't do minus 240, but those two other odds there, if I can combine them both, what would you do?
Well, that's a great point you bring up because, you know, minus 240 is a pretty big price. And if you can make two bets on the other side, you're going to either go for something that's going to happen a little bit bigger at the plus 230 if he... it looks like if he wins in the distance, but if the fight goes to decision and he wins, you get plus 140, right? So it's kind of in the middle. You put $100 on the plus 140 and you put $100 on the plus 230. If he happens to win in the distance, you profited $130, not 230 because 130 because you have to minus out the $100 you put on the plus 140. If the fight goes to decision, you still win a little bit. You know, you win $40. Laying minus 240, I think your $200 bet would be around $85 profit or something. I think it's 83. I think it's $83 that you'd be profiting laying minus 240 on a $200 bet. So it's kind of in the middle. You're not quite satisfied with him to win with that much of a payout, but you think he's got a shot to do it in the distance. Might as well take the plus 230 because at least you get 1.3 times your bet there. So I'm kind of liking that.
Okay. Fair. I like that too. I think that's fair, right? I have a difficult time laying anything over minus 190. Very, very, very difficult time. And even, you know, in the minus 150 area, I'm like, how can I do it, right? So when I look at something like this, thank you for helping me out there. I'm sure it's going to help everybody else out as well. So I think that's fantastic.
All right, now let's go. Let's take that route. Let's take the plus 140 for him to win in a decision, and the plus 230 for him to win by KO disqualification or anything within the distance. So let's take a shot at that, my man.
Yeah.
All right. What do we got next?
Listen, there's other fights like. You know, one of my favorite fighters of all time was Alexei Oleinik, right? Only because I'm an old man, and he's an old man, and he came into the UFC very, very, very late, and he was just submitting guys like crazy. And then there's Fabricio Werdum, right? Who's another old guy, and I can't lay money on either one of these guys because they're so stinking old, right? So when I look at these fights, minus 330 for Fabricio, yeah, I can see that because he was a former champion. And Alexei Oleinik took a lot of beatings, and they're both fantastic with jiu-jitsu. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to stay away from that fight, but that's going to be another fun one to watch, okay? Mm-hmm. But here's the one I want to talk about, right? And I'm kind of shying away from some of these other guys like Dominic Cruz. He hasn't fought in 2.5 years, Kiev. Mm. How can I, as being confident enough to tell you, hey, listen, put money on Dominic Cruz. I can't because he hasn't fought in such a long time, right? And he's Mr. Injury.
Oh, was it injuries? Because he's 22-2. I remember seeing him a long time ago.
Yeah, he constantly blows out his elbows, his chest, his head, his ears, his hair, his toes. Whatever it is, he's constantly getting hurt. I just can't put money on the guy, and I can't not put money on the guy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and his opponent's pretty tough, too.
Henry came out of nowhere, and he's a double champ right now. So, yeah, it's hard. But even though Dominic Cruz ran his division for so many years, I can't bet against Cruz, and I can't bet for him.
Yeah, that's a long time. That's a long time to be out, yeah. And especially with all this distraction with the virus. You never know what's going to happen in this situation. Yeah. So I could see it. I could see it. You know, maybe take a piss break or something, or go take a walk, yeah. or go clean up some of your party dishes or whatever you're doing with your guys and during this fight, because right afterwards you definitely have the main event. So you don't have to play everything single fight, but there's a fight that I was looking at here. The fight before that with Ngannou.
Oof.
Oh, these heavyweights, man. Oh. Francis Ngannou, we've seen him fight a lot. And we got Rozenstruik there.
Rozenstruik, yeah. Oh.
These guys are heavyweights, 242 pounds and 258 for Ngannou, my man. These guys are heavy, heavy swingers, and you can see a knockout happen.
I'm cutting you off because I'm so stinking excited for this, Kiev. Okay, you remember how excited you were to watch Mike Tyson fight? What's going to happen with Tyson's fights?
Oh, knockouts, man.
The knockout right away, 1, 2, 3 rounds. If it goes past 3 rounds, you're like, this fight sucks. But you lay down your $80, right, and you better get there early because you know Mike Tyson's going to knock somebody out in 90 seconds, right? Those are these two guys right here, okay? Francis Ngannou, Jorginho Rozenstruik. Neither one of these guys have a ground game. Neither one. Right, so I look at this and I'm like, oh, I'm so excited. This was supposed to be one of the fights that happened during quarantine, right? So obviously now it's happening here on May 9th, here at the end of the week. So I look at Rozenstruik and I absolutely love the guy. He's got some cannons and he's got stamina, right? Ngannou, he was a guy that was absolutely one of the best about 2 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. He was knocking people out, Kiev, by just looking at he was the Mike Tyson, right? That's the way to look at it. He's knocking people out, uppercuts, people are flying everywhere, they're going out there. It was like a cartoon.
Oh yeah.
It was a cartoon. And you wanna know what happened? He stunk. He stunk again. He went back. He had no cardio, right? He's mm-hmm. knocking people out when he couldn't knock them out. He had no cardio. So he went back to the gym, reinvented himself, right? So he went Overeem, he knocked him out. Stipe, he lost by unanimous decision, right? To keep the belt, right? So Stipe did the right thing, and he boxed him, and he stayed close. He got him exhausted. He won the fight. Derek Lewis, that was another fight we were all excited to see, and that was one of the worst cards, the worst main events anybody's ever seen. People booed the heck out of both of these, Derek Lewis and Ngannou, right? And Ngannou ended up losing, right? And he came in there saying, listen, I was scared to lose. So he reinvented himself. He came back. He went and fought in China, right? Performance of the night against Curtis Blaydes. He knocks him out. He comes back against an old Cain Velasquez, right? In Phoenix, which I was at that fight, knocks him out in the first round, like it blew him up. Mm-hmm. And then he comes back and beats another old Junior Dos Anjos, another performance of the night, just a few months back, right? Last year, and back in June. So the guy's got a lot of power. Now, Jorginho, right? He's a guy that's 10-0. 9 wins by knockout, right? 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 fights in the UFC, all knockouts. Junior Albini, knockout. Alan Crowder, knockout. Andre Arlovsky, knockout. Alistair Omri, I don't know if Kiev, did you see that fight? You probably did, but I'm just going to remind you, okay? Overeem, one of the greatest heavyweight fighters of all time, absolutely can destroy anybody. He was so scared of Jorginho, Rozenstruik, that he just wrestled him, took him down. And Rozenstruik's got no ground game, but he did the right Overeem did the right thing by taking him down over and over and over again. 4 seconds left of the fifth round, Overeem gets hit by a right hand that his lip exploded. Not just his lip, mm-hmm. but his whole upper lip exploded, completely knocked him out. It was the greatest thing I've ever saw in my whole entire life. Okay? So what does that tell me? What does that tell me? This guy, still after 5 rounds, has enough power to knock somebody out. And typically, heavyweights don't have that.
Right.
All right? So here's what I'm getting to, okay? Can I lay right now at minus 260 in some sites, Francis Ngannou? And can I do that? No, I think either one of these guys could knock somebody out in a second, right? Mm-hmm. They'll look at either one of me or you. They'll knock us out just by looking at us, but it could happen, right? Mm-hmm. But the same thing with Rozenstruik. He can knock anybody out anytime, anywhere. He could do it, okay? So I can't drop minus 260. I can't, right? Anything can happen in the ring. Like I said before, Rozenstruik knocked out 4 seconds left, blew up Overeem's face. And if you guys want to go out and Google it, go Google it, because I'm going to tell you, you're going to be like, ooh.
You're going to like that one.
Oh, you're going to love it, right? So for me, Rozenstruik has big power, right? And he's still, you know, like I said, he knocked out Overeem, right? 4 seconds left. I really like him. I don't think either one of these guys have great wrestling. These guys are going to stand up. So here's the question, right? We've been off for so long. Have these guys been training? How hard have they been training, right? Are they going to dance? Are they going to want to go out there and knock somebody out? I don't know, right? I just don't know. It's going to be very difficult, right? We're coming up into something that we've never seen before in our entire lives. They're not in the gym training. So for me, because of the knockout power on both of these guys, right, and from what I saw from Rozenstruik, what happened his last fight in the fifth round with 4 seconds left, I'm going to take him at plus 140. Now listen, depending how I feel, right, I might put a little sprinkle on it on Rozenstruik winning at a plus 400 KO.
He's plus 230 to win right now. I think you said plus one.
Some plates 240, some plates 230, depending on where you're shopping.
Oh, right. Yeah, I think you accidentally said 140, so I'm just saying that. But you're right. He's got some good price on him, and I think that's what you're getting at. I really like the price on, you know, two guys like this. The only thing that worries you is, Ngannou, his experience and his reach seems to be quite a bit bigger, quite a bit longer anyway.
But listen, they could both take a punch, right? And that's my thing. This should be a minus 140, 130 for Francis, and Rozenstruik should be a plus 120. This is a perfect opportunity for somebody coming in, and Francis has, if you go back and look at his other fights, this is a perfect opportunity to get somebody that's the underdog that's going to beat the guy that's the favorite and make some good money on it. Kim, how many times did I tell you that? Don't buy into the hype. Francis is a hype guy. Rozenstruik is a guy that's coming up, right? That people are not going crazy over just yet. But this is a fight that can make everybody go crazy over Rozenstruik.
Absolutely.
Okay? So listen, I'm going to put a little sprinkle. Little. Like, you can't see me right now, but you know the salt guy? I'm doing a little salt.
We know the salt guy, Danny. So,
okay. All right, TKO at plus 400 with Rozenstruik. Why not?
I'm thinking that.
How much more fun will that be? Because it's, you know, you're not only winning at plus 240, but you're going to get a plus 400 as well. Oh my gosh, it's fun.
So I'm thinking that for sure. But the way I look at this fight too is that Nagano, you're right. He lost 2-3 in a row back there, and then he got his head out of his ass, and then he started attacking again. Just like you said, he was involved in the worst fight when they're sitting there dancing around going five rounds for a main event, and he got booed off the stage, right? So, Nagano's going to go right after this guy.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a chance that this thing is under 1.5 rounds, and you're going to get close to even money with that. Two big heavyweight throwers. I think if Francis does not knock out Rosenstruck, Nagano doesn't knock him out
in the first round
or in the beginning of the second round, then Rosenstruck has a good shot of winning this, because whenever this goes past the first round, Nagano seems to lose, right?
That's my third bet, Kiev. You can get it over a round and a half right now on some sites for plus 115.
Okay, so you like the over. I think it protects my plus 400 for Rosenstruck if I take about an even money with the same amount. See, I'm going to go higher on the plus 400 here. I think okay. It's not. There's nothing in stone. This is what I'm leaning towards. But I think I go the same amount with the plus 400 for Rosenstruck to win within the three rounds, within the distance, and Nagano. If he's going to win, it's going to be under a round and a half, in my opinion. I feel comfortable doing it like that. But I do get what you're saying. Maybe Rosenstruck does go to the third round and hits him. So that's what you're thinking. I'm on a little bit different side of that one.
Here's Nagano's record. Ready? And this is the round. Okay. Ready? UFC, right? Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, I'm just going to read off the numbers. 2-2-1-1-1-1. Lost 5, lost 3. 1-1-1. What that tells me is if he's not knocking somebody out right away, which is 1-1-1-1, 2 losses, 1-1-1-1, he's got no stamina.
Yeah, now, he's going to lose. Exactly.
Right. Okay, right? So, Jorginho, right? Here's where we have UFC. TKO. Second round, TK, first round, KO, first round, KO, fifth round. This is what I look at, right? This guy's still got enough power after somebody wrestled him and beat him to the ground in the fifth round with 4 seconds left to knock somebody out. Please go look at it. He's 10-0, 9 knockouts, 1 decision. His one decision was in 2018 in Japan, and who knows? If you guys do your research and you learn some things, even Joe Rogan talks about it, that Japan is very corrupt in terms of fighting. So don't ever bet with fights in Japan. So who knows if they said, hey, listen, don't knock the guy out. Just go to the end. First round, decision. First round, second round, first round. But fifth round, knockout of Overeem, right? He's not knocking out guys here. So listen. When I look at this, this number is way off, way, way off, right? Let the public decide what the number is going to be at the end of the day, but don't be that public guy that says, I got to take the favorite here, because this is a perfect example of somebody that could be knocked out or taken advantage of late in the fight or even lose a decision if they don't knock the guy out in the first round. As much as I love Francis, I think he's fantastic. He's so much fun to watch because he puts guys in hospitals, but so does Rosenstruck. He's the guy that's stepping up. Same age, same type of, body type, big fists, hammer. Listen,
I agree with you, and I think you're even going to have a better shot that the fact that there hasn't been fighting in a while. These guys, we don't know what they're doing. I'm going to take the underdog more in this situation with no crowd there, and it's just a whole different situation. The favorite, has been there and done that. The underdog is going to be a little bit hungrier. I think I kind of like the underdog in this situation. So I lean more towards that just because when it comes to uncertainty, then you go more towards plus money in general. It's just kind of like a general rule. All right. Well, we only have a few minutes, but there is one more fight here, Danny. And well, there's a lot more fights, but we're going to get into the main event a little bit. Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje here.
Oh my God, I love them both.
Yeah, I know, I know. Yeah, I
love them stinking both, right? So Tony Ferguson, he's like a, if I was 15 years old, that's who I would want to be. If I was 16 years old, 18 years old, I want to be Justin Gaethje. I love both of these guys, right? So here's one thing I love about Justin Gaethje. He's going to go throw bombs, right? He'll fight anybody. I made some great money off of him when he was an underdog a few times, right? And I picked some rounds with him, and he's a fantastic wrestler. That's what drives me crazy about Justin Gaethje. Here's an Arizona kid, right? And if people don't know, I'm someplace in Arizona. He's a state champion wrestler. He's no joke with wrestling. What does he do in the UFC? He throws punches and he takes punches. He's always said, I'm going to take a beating and I'm going to quit early so I'm not walking around with the something wrong on my brain, which I think there is already, but that's always been his thing. I'm not going to go home with brain damage. Okay, Tony Ferguson. What do I hate about him? He's a completely slow starter and he takes a beating. What do I love about the guy? Everything else, Kiev. Everything else about the guy, right? So his first round, he's a very slow starter. He takes a beating. He will get some blood on him, but he's going to turn around and he's going to win the fight over and over and over again. The problem is, I haven't seen him fight in a long time. He was supposed to fight Nurmagomedov a while ago, and the 3 days before the fight, he blew out his knee because he tripped over a wire.
Okay? I remember that. Yep.
Okay. So if you don't even know what the guy did, so they did the surgery. They go, hey, go to physical therapy. He goes to physical therapy, and they go, hey, we're going to do this exercise, this exercise. And he looks at these guys like, I'm not going to do what you tell me. This is ridiculous. I can do this at home. He went home and did it himself and became a bigger person, right? He became a monster. And he's building – he's a mean – his mindset – is unlike anybody else in the UFC, right? My problem is he takes a beating in the beginning, right? If he can weather the storm of a Justin Gaethje in the first round, he will beat Justin Gaethje after that, okay? Justin Gaethje does not have a gas tank. Justin Gaethje does not wrestle like he should. He wants to throw punches and he wants to do it great. Tony Ferguson will take a beating in the beginning and then finish you off at the end. And he's going to be bloody. And then Justin Gaethje is going to be bloody. So when I tell you, I can't tell you who's going to win the fight. I can't. I can't lay money on Tony Ferguson at that price. I don't want to do it as much as I do. I want to put money on Justin Gaethje at plus 165 to win the fight because I love him that much. This fight is something I can't gauge strictly because Tony Ferguson hasn't fought in a while. Justin Gaethje really wants this. But even more, Kiev, both of these guys want to fight Khabib for the title, and this was supposed to be a Tony Khabib fight, and I think Corona happened, right, between me and you and whoever else is listening. Corona happened because Tony Ferguson was supposed to fight Khabib for the title. It was the fourth time that this thing was been canceled for whatever reason. Blown out knee. Somebody didn't miss weight. Somebody did coronavirus. So
Corona came just because of this fight. I totally agree. Yeah, 100%.
Listen, I expect Tony to win. I love Justin, like with the passion. I love Justin because he made me a bunch of money, and I love the way he fights, right? If Tony wins and there's another fight set up with Khabib, you want to know what? Liquidate everything because there's something else going to happen in the world at that moment right now because these guys are never destined to fight. But honestly, I liked Tony in this fight. But I can't tell you 100% confidence, everybody, just because I haven't seen him fight in over 2 years, right?
Well,
but I really love him.
And I came into this fight really wondering your thoughts on it, and I was leaning the minus 175 here for the Tony Ferguson here. And a lot of the points that you made there was some of the reasons, you know, Gaethje kind of goes out there and blows his load. Then he's tired and he should have been, you know, wrestling more. He should be feeling his opponent out. And that's what Ferguson does while he takes a beating, you know? So, you're right. It's minus 175. It's probably the right price. It can't be that far off. You know, there's uncertainty there. I feel Tony Ferguson's going to run. I think maybe at minus 200 is where I don't play it, but not 100% decided. I'm gonna think about this a little bit more. But I do want to ask you, the fight goes to the decision meaning it goes the distance, is around the plus.
Without a question, Tony Ferguson.
Right, right.
Plus, I think Justin has to knock him out.
Okay, well, there you go. Is Ferguson going to knock him out? Because if he doesn't,
you could.
Okay, well, so is that plus 350 correct that it goes to a decision? Minus 480, it doesn't.
It could, right? But hard thing, right? Because I don't know what he's going to do right now. He hasn't fought since, gosh, let me take a look here real quick. I want to be accurate. He hasn't fought since he blew out his knee when he was supposed to fight Khabib, right? Since
2019, I think it was.
He beat Cerrone, and he beat him handily, right? Cerrone, Pettis, Kevin Lee, Dos Anjos, Barbosa, all these names. If you are a UFC guy, you should know. Josh Thompson,
right? Yeah.
All these guys you should know, right? TKO, submission. He beat these guys and beat them with, you know, like a rented mule.
Yeah, and mostly it didn't go, you know, to a decision. I think the only one was Dos Anjos, right? That went to a decision.
Fight of the night, and Dos Anjos is still a maniac.
Yeah, absolutely, and the rest of them didn't. So, you know, that says that maybe that price of plus 350 is correct that it goes decision. And I wanted to cover that a little bit because you always want to look for angles on the main event, right? You're always looking, trying to do that. So we'll cross that one off. Definitely not going to lay minus.
Look at Justin Gaethje, right? Cerrone. And again, what I mentioned before, right? Cerrone's a little bit older, right? He's 37 years old. TKO, right? I think it was a rib shot that he knocked him out with. Edson Barbosa, a little bit older fighter, still the first round, fight of the night. James Vick was a guy that everybody thought he was going to be fighting for the title. Knockout, first round, right? And if you took him, you made some money, right? He lost against Dustin Poirier, which is a great fighter. Eddie Alvarez, great fighter, right? But Michael Johnson, so he's coming to the UFC. He's fought the great guys, right? Two he lost, but he came back with three really, really solid wins. But, man, Tony, there's something. Well, look, Tony Ferguson, one, since he's been in the UFC, okay? 12. 12 fights in a row.
Yeah.
12 fights in a row. He lost one, 12-1, 13-1, 14-1, 15-1 in the UFC. That's no joke. That is no joke when we're talking about the top of the top, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love Tony. He takes a beating when you watch him. You're like, Tony, don't lose. He's taking a beating. All of a sudden, next thing you know, he wins the fight.
Yeah, and Tony hasn't lost since 2012. You know, so long time ago. and like you said, very great streak going. And I don't know if this injury, these injuries and everything's going to slow him down where he hurt his knee tripping on that wire. But this is a huge fight.
There's no tomato cans. He's not fighting me and you at the same time. It's tomato cans.
All right. No tomato cans here. Well, I still kind of like the 175, so that's going to be my lean for this fight, Danny. That's about the time we have. Do you have any other quick things you want to say about the event?
I don't. I just want everybody to have a good time. Get the fight. What else are you doing? Everybody, what else are you doing? You're sitting home doing nothing. Your wife's complaining to you. Your kids are busting your chops. Get the fight. You're going to enjoy it. And you want to know what? Here it makes it even better. In Kiev, I do this all the time. When the guys are walking out and you look at their face, right? You look at their face. How's their face looking? I'm going to put some money on the guy that's walking out doesn't look nervous and the other guy looks. That's where I put some couple of bucks on, and I've won a lot right there as well. So we talked about a couple of fights, but get the fight. ESPN Plus. It's $5.99 a month, $4.99. Get that. You get the ESPN a preliminary card. Pay a couple of bucks. Get that main event. You're not going to be disappointed, everybody. And you want to know what? You get to put a couple dollars down. Put a couple shekels.
Some money. Get your buddies together. You know, have them put in 10 bucks. There you go. Have them put in 10 bucks. Covers your expense.
Six feet apart, right? You guys throw each other beers from the refrigerator over to the next guy, to the next guy. You'll have a good time. Get the fights. I'm telling you, you're going to have a good time. Next week is going to be another great card, but this is the best one in a long time.
All right, well, that was Cub Fan Danny. You can follow him on Twitter at Cub Fan Danny. Thanks a lot, buddy. Had a blast with you on this one. We went deep into this. Man, I'll be tweeting at you this weekend. You know it. Cannot wait for these fights.
I'll be in a pool watching these fights this weekend.
All right, well, there you are. And if you guys have any questions for us, please tweet us at The Odds Breakers. Have a blast watching UFC 249, and go get some winners.